the New World Report. I'm John Bassworth, Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. Panama, the Panama Canal. The drought has damaged the canal's ability to carry the regular traffic through from east to west, west to east. In fact, I'm told that some ships have to offload some of their cargo in order to get through the reduced canal. This has to do with the drought. It's part of a natural cycle. It is also, coincidentally, at the same time, there's trouble in the Suez, which is man-made. But these two canals drive a deal of the understanding of supply chain on planet Earth. So we pay attention to Panama when it has trouble with the drought. However, Panama has other problems. One, the drought. Two, a copper mine now in arbitration that is said to be in dispute between the government and the unions. Three, the president of Panama is ill with a rare disease and it weakens him. Four, there's an election in 2024 in Panama, which is a banking center for Central America, for all the Americas, and understood as a stable state. However, that presidency now has in lead, according to polls, a man who's been condemned to jail, a previous president, been condemned to jail by a court. And finally, the Darien Gap, unsolved, thousands coming through the Darien Gap routinely being bused to Costa Rica or not. Costa Rica is no measure of stability these days either. The president of Costa Rica and the president of Panama agree that the migrant situation destabilizes them. However, that's enough. Professor, Panama, it's never been a concern since the canal was built because it was always said to be secure from foreign interference. It looks like it's got internal interference, or is there a hidden hand here? Thank you.
Thank you, John. Well, certainly a couple of key points that you brought out about Panama. I mean, number one, this has been, especially, following, the years in which the U.S. managed the Panama Canal Zone and built so much of that infrastructure, despite a checkered history of U.S. intervention and other problems, Panama has generally been one of the best governed and one of the most prosperous countries in Central America. And certainly through the canal has come to play a role as a center not only of international logistics and distribution globally, but also a center of international finance. And so the current situation is worrisome just because of the strategic importance of Panama in the global financial system, in the global logistics system, and frankly, militarily for the United States and others, if we should ever find ourselves in a global conflict with a country such as the PRC. So having said that, as you alluded to, you have these multiple stresses. One, of course, is climate change related. The lowering of the water levels in Lake Gaitun, which has meant that Panama has been forced to reduce the number of transits through the canal and impose other restrictions. Now, fortunately, in the last month, there have been some increase in rains. And so the Panamanians just announced that they're going to be able to marginally increase that number of reduced transits from 18 to 24. But that's still problematic because it takes away a key source of income for the Panamanian government to address problems. The other difficulty that you alluded to was a bizarre set of protests over a mine, going back to whether the way in which it had gotten its contract was unconstitutional. The Panama court actually, after a couple of rounds, ruled that the Canadian firm First Quantum did not have a legitimate contract. It ruled that there were some 25 different articles of the Panamanian constitution that had been violated in giving this. The problem was that mine, which exports the vast majority of its copper to China, was so big. It accounted for something like 40,000 direct and indirect jobs and accounted for as much as 5% of the Panamanian GDP. And so and after the protests and everything else, they're now in the process, it appears, of definitively shutting it down. And so that literally shaves off 5% of the Panamanian GDP. And so what you have is on top of the canal problems, which have international logistics implications and also grave stress to the Panamanian government, you have something that takes on top of that, you know, basically the entire growth projected for Panama off the table. And then on top of that, as you also alluded to, you have a certain level of dissatisfaction with the performance of the Cortizo government, which is not helped by his medical challenges. You know, certainly the heart goes out to him for that. The bottom line is that you have the prospect, as you pointed to, of Ricardo Martinelli, someone who has been criminally indicted, extradited from the United States. His own kids have been obliged to testify against him in a U.S. court of law. And so right now he is by far the front runner for the Panama 2024 presidential elections. And so we could go from a economic crisis to a government that could take Panama forward in ways that may make the United States or others profoundly uncomfortable with global repercussions. But so we'll see how things go with that.
And if I understand correctly, we're also looking at trouble throughout the Central America because of Chinese investment. Let's be diplomatic here. So we go from Panama to Nicaragua. There's a headline this morning from the Chinese press that China's come to some understanding with Nicaragua. Now, I remind myself that we hardly ever talk about Nicaragua because it's darkness visible. And in addition, it is so outside the bounds of can it be reformed or is there an opposition? I think the opposition has all been thrown out of the country and that the president and his wife rule with an iron fist. We don't know about the jailing situation. I believe the Catholic Church was invited to leave most recently. So China and Nicaragua, is that a challenge to all of Central America or can it be isolated?
It is certainly a growing item of concern, John. And as you alluded to, one of the interesting parallels is that within Central America, back in 2017, Panama was the first in about a decade to switch a recognition from Taiwan to the PRC, with a lot of Chinese projects going forward in Panama, raising a lot of eyes in Washington. And that continues to play out. In Nicaragua, it was interesting that the Ortegas, which in many ways have kind of become the, you know, Kim Jong-un's, the North Koreans of Central America, America in terms of their authoritarianism and isolation and policies. But after the 2021 elections, finding themselves extremely internationally isolated by both the United States and Europe, they did something that they had delayed almost 14 years doing. They stopped trying to basically extort as much money from their Taiwanese friends as they could, and they turned to the PRC. The PRC in those first 2 years was actually pretty slow to give them many benefits. There was a little housing project that was being built, et cetera, literally in the past couple of months, since about October, you've seen a takeoff in Chinese projects with Nicaragua. And it's not just economic projects, but they put the Quetta Airport, an airport to the northwest of Managua, an old military airport that the Chinese are going to build out. There's a train connection, a possible larger train connection also, seven different fairly major road projects, including a coastal road and other connector roads and bridges. There are a series of other two major energy projects, I believe, both hydroelectric, et cetera. And so you have this apparent kind of explosion of Chinese activities. On top of that, you had Nicaraguan participation in the Chinese Global Public Security Forum and apparent new initiatives where the Chinese may train the Nicaraguan police as well as possibly providing some military support. And so one of the items that makes Nicaragua most concern, apart from its strategic proximity to the United States. I mean, you know, remember, there was a reason why the United States under President Ronald Reagan was pretty adamant about not allowing the Soviets in the form of the Sandinistas to consolidate their foothold in Nicaragua again. This is back in 1979 and the war by the Contras against the Sandinistas. With its isolation, with its anti-U.S. extremism, remember, Nicaragua, the Ortegas are a government that are bringing in The Russians, they work closely with the Russians in military and other forms. They work with the Iranians. They've recently moved to expand that cooperation with the Iranians when the Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, visited with his defense minister. And so the prospect of a significant Chinese move in combination of what Nicaragua does elsewhere raises the prospect of, not unlike Cuba, of a country that is more than willing to host Chinese security threats, digital and in other activities, in ways that in time of conflict could be used against the United States. And so while we're certainly not to a military scenario yet, the nature of the Ortega's in combination with this expansion of Chinese commitments, I think raises some eyebrows about the nature of this concern, again, ever closer to the U.S. border.
It is Central America, and the big state in Central America is Mexico. Does Mexico have a similar entanglement with Nicaragua and possibly China, or is it outside of these machinations?
Well, the interesting part about Mexico is that economically, China it had been seen as a competitor to Mexico because of Mexico's manufactured sector tied into the United States. China was seen as essentially undercutting those manufacturers rather than complementing them. Although, culturally over the years, there had been some interesting kind of prejudices, even going back to the Mexican Revolution. There is a famous phrase in Spanish, los pinches chinos. And it's a very colorful, expression, kind of reflecting some of the negative cultural attitudes toward the Chinese, even with AMLO. Having said that, however, China has established a significant presence. There are some agricultural exports. There are some exports of Mexican tequila. The Chinese have become involved, very deeply in the telecom sector with Huawei and others. They're involved in the construction sector with the Maya tourist train in the south. They got involved in the electricity sector. They got involved, although with some problems, in lithium mining in a place called Bacanora in the Sonora Desert. They've been involved in petroleum operations, as well as the operation of Mexican ports. And so, although there's a kind of a love-hate relationship between Mexico and China, and certainly Mexico. One of the things that's happening right now with the move towards nearshoring is not only do you have companies trying to get out of China moving to Mexico, benefiting the Mexicans, but you actually have Chinese companies that are accelerating their investments in the north of Mexico, in Nuevo León, to continue to have access to the U.S. market. But the other piece with AMLO that is somewhat ironic is that is AMLO has tried to be the kind of the leader of the Latin American left, and Mexico has traditionally had an amount of historic influence over the Central American states. Mexico has been, and AMLO has been relatively tolerant of the left, including the Ortegas, and as well as other non-Central American left, such as Maduro. And so one thing with Mexico kind of reluctantly backing into deeper relationships with the Chinese, even as they showed distrust toward them, but also Mexico being one of the less helpful states in terms of pushback against where Nicaragua has been going with the authoritarianism of the Ortegas, which have caused, a lot of suffering for so many Nicaraguans who have fled to Costa Rica, fled to the United States and elsewhere.
Professor Evan Ellis, The New World Report. We're headed to the southern border. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.